No fight is hopeless till it has been fought.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
Can we go back to the Two Champs, One Chump song for this?
Wait, the intro or outro song?
Yes.
But why? This new music is so much more epic, I think is the word I want.
But we have an epic co-host.
Plus, I don't even know that I can say it's new music anymore at this point. It's many months old. Wait, we have another co-host? Jeez, what straggler did we get to come join us this week?
It is your old friend, Greg.
Old Greg! For anybody that knows that skit, I'm sure our British listeners are giggling in glee.
We don't have British listeners. Banter stole them.
They can't listen to both?
I don't know. British people seem very busy.
That's true. Always rushing around on the tubes and stuff.
The tubes.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to be back.
Yeah. Welcome back, Greg. And, of course, for listeners that haven't been listening regularly to catch it, I'm Will. And the other more regular voice you hear here is...
I'm Aaron. Can I introduce Greg for people that are new to 2.0 and don't have any idea why he matters?
Well, Greg would probably argue that he doesn't matter to second edition, but yeah, go ahead and intro him anyway.
I mean, as we're going to see, Greg's opinions are often problematic, so he definitely still matters.
We'll get into that. Listeners, you're in for a debate in a little bit.
So Mr. Greg Atkinson is a two-time world champion, well known as one of, almost undebatably, one of the two best first edition players in America ever. He also probably should have a third overall championship, just except for some wonky scoring. So he is a truly...
Oh, I almost forgot about that.
He mentioned it earlier, and I actually just randomly read the Thrones Times, because I'm a geek, the Thrones Times where it's discussed. So he should almost certainly have that third world championship. So phenomenal player. He made the agenda Knights of the Hollow Hill and the location Fleabottom, both of which we'll be seeing in some form or fashion since they're champ cards and they're coming back. Yeah. Great, great player. Someone to pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, and speaking of those champ cards, I'm sure you're limited on how much you can say, Greg, but I know the champs are kind of, you know, reworking cards a little bit along with FFG or ANA now for the second ed environment. Have you begun work on updating your designs for second edition?
Well, before I get into that first, man, did Aaron butter me up or what? I mean... Look at that. We're about to get into it, and he's, you know, just like stroking my ego.
Ego. Yeah. Ego. We're trying not to earn that explicit rating this time around.
Hey, man, facts are facts.
I'm sure when it comes time for me to design those cards, I'll be under NDA, you know. So I am eagerly looking forward to my cards getting converted to 2.0. We'll see. Knights of Hollow Hill seems a little more problematic than Fleabottom. And to be honest, anyone who's ever talked to me knows that I wasn't real pleased with the Fleabottom design. So that's actually the one I'm excited about converting to 2.0, because mostly if I get the opportunity, I really want to mix it up a little bit. So
sweet.
A new Fleabottom would be cool, because I actually think the first edition flea bottom, which is a zero cost reducer, kneel for -2 and the character comes into play now, might break the gold curve in second edition.
Right. We're going to get into that, but I actually agree with Aaron that the way this game is designed right now, you know, you struggle to get gold, and if we start printing a lot of cards that make it too easy to get gold, then the game is not going to be what I think the designers intended to be.
Huh. Before we move on, a card was actually literally like 2 seconds ago spoiled on, from this chapter pack, spoiled on the Facebook group that I think we should read. Trading with the Pentoshi, 10-2-1.
Oh, what?
10-2-1.
Wow. It was only 8 gold in first.
No, not first edition, the CCG.
CCG.
Sorry.
But when revealed, each opponent gains 3 gold, cannot be canceled.
Ooh.
I'm going to play the shit out of that.
Interesting.
Are you really, Aaron? No, yeah. I don't think I wouldn't play that.
Oh, I am.
What's the reserve?
Crap. That's just closed it. Let me double check. I believe 6, because I was looking at it for like five minutes. Yeah, 5.
Mm, yeah, I don't like it.
I don't know. You can get some stuff out of your hand that turn, but giving your opponent 3 gold is tricky, especially the timing of giving them that gold. It's when revealed, you said, right?
Yeah.
So if you're up against a Lannister player, you just gave them the gold they need for a treachery during your marshalling phase or before if it comes up. I'm a little worried about that.
I don't know. I'm a pretty big fan. I understand the downside. If it gets hit, if naval superiority sees a resurgence, it kind of has to go away. But until or unless that happens, like in the first couple turns, your opponent's probably playing something huge gold to get their stuff out anyway. And if they're going to get it out anyway, I'd rather just be able to do what I want and do it better than they do.
Yeah. You know, what it might actually be nice for is if you're planning on resetting the board with Varys, go ahead. If you have the choice or if your opponent jumps on it, let them go first, blow the extra gold plane stuff down to the board, and now you can for sure afford Varys.
I mean, even if you're first, right? Like, you drop Varys, and then they're just going to sit there with their extra gold and go, I'm going to sit on it. Don't trigger Varys. Smile and enjoy your board position.
Yeah.
I just think overall, when people do play those high gold plots on the first turn, though, it's normally like Noble Cause, which is what, a 5 gold plot with 2 reducers. So it's effective a 7 gold plot. You give them 3 more, they're effectively at 10, the same as you. And they have a 6 reserve plot and you have a 5. So, you know, the other very common high gold first turn plot I see, you know, calling the banners is often, you know, +3 on that first turn if you flop the 3 characters. So they're at 9 again for 6 reserve. You know, I'm not sure it's that first turn play I'd want to make. I really see it more for a deck like Lannister later on in the game when you've hit their hand with multiple intrigue. You give them the extra gold because, you know, it doesn't matter because you've already, you know, cleared their hand out. So they have extra gold to sit on because they can't even spend it on it.
With First Snow coming, too, it's a good thing to play before First Snow. Let them get out all that extra chud that you're just going to bounce back the next turn.
Okay, well, obviously, there's a bit of ground here with trading with the Pentoshi to kind of feel out the best time to play it. I think I agree. It's probably going to be a little later than the first turn, but I wanted in my hands to kind of tinker with and try out a bit. But we'll save some more of those thoughts, I think, for the full-blown chapter pack review, which should be coming out next week. For the moment, let's kind of dig into whatever other sorts of news and announcements we have at the moment. Did we have anything new and official from FFG so far?
Oh,
I don't think we did.
Well, yes, the new restricted person list.
Oh, you're right. We did the restricted person list. I almost forgot about that. That's an interesting precedent for FFG to just set now at this point. Greg, you were around along with me, right? Back in the very early days of the CCG. I mean, I think this probably happened in 03 when Melnick was banned.
That was 04, but yes.
It was 04? Okay. Yeah, my bad. So, you know, 11 years ago, we had a player banned then. And no, like, formal policy, as far as I know, was ever established until now.
Yeah.
Now, it appears other stuff prompted that now, but it's just interesting that we had a need that far back, but didn't get it until now.
Well, what happened back then, a decade ago, was less about tournament play and more about online behavior. Right. And so, you know, it was a different situation, but I think one of the reasons why we probably never had it is because this game, for the most part, doesn't attract the people that are normally willing to go to unethical behaviors to win tournaments. When you don't have large prizes on the line, when you have in general an older community that is actually a pretty tight community, you just don't see that sort of stuff very often. In a way, we almost police ourselves as much as anything. So, but this incident wasn't for Thrones. It was for Conquest, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So it's probably why we're seeing it now.
Yeah. It's one thing that I did find maybe not disappointing, but something that I wish we'd gotten more of in the article was kind of just more guidelines and grounds. Like, they just, as far as I could tell, maybe I missed a link in the article, but as far as I could tell, it basically just said, hey, you know, if you do something bad enough, we might ban you, and that'll be for a length of time of our choosing, and if stores don't double-check this list and keep these people out, they might not get to host events. Here's the list.
You know what? I'm okay with that. Like, I don't think FFG... don't cheat. I mean, it's not that hard. Like, if you cheated, we might suspend you. If there's something else that comes up and it's out of nowhere, we'll discuss it, but, like, there's no question this guy really deserved it.
Yeah, but I just would have liked some sort of was there even a real indicator of what level of infraction needs reported to FFG by a local TO? For instance, if I have to disqualify Greg from the tournament for playing, four copies of Tyrion in his deck, like, is that worth referring to FFG for possible suspension? What if, I don't know, Greg knocks his discard pile over on the ground?
Greg, is this how you won all those world titles?
I was just saying that when I play four Tyrians at our store championship, I expect a pat on the back from Will, not a tattletale scenario.
That's true. Well, and the plus side is Greg normally is playing like 75 card decks anyway, so it's really hard to notice if he has four copies of a card in the deck.
That's why he does it.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
No, but I mean that's the sort of thing that I would have liked a little bit more of a guideline on, so that we know how to connect this structure to the tourney rules structure that they just gave us.
But if you want, like, clarification, and this, obviously, FFG could have given us more, but they never do. If you want this clarification, every time someone has an infraction, report it to FFG. If they get sick of seeing these reports, they will put out a clarification.
That is really lame reasoning.
That's how FFG works.
Still lame.
Fair enough, but, like, it's exactly how FFG works. Sorry.
I just find it funny that there's an article, and then here's a list of all the people that are banned, and it's one person. I'm like, they even put in the formatting for a list-type situation in the article, and I'm just like, one dude. I'm like, you know, you might as well just put a sign like free burritos with a bunch of flashing arrows around it. You know, that sort of thing. So...
Oh.
Well then. So that's the FFG news for you.
Hey, we had more site news, right?
Yeah, we've got more going on the site, of course. A few more articles by the time you listen to this have gone up since the last episode. So that's nice. But one thing I definitely wanted to draw some attention to on the site is listener and now friend of the show, Luke W. I don't know if you want me to listen list your last name, who has some magazine editing experience, volunteered to step up and help with some of the site maintenance and kind of editing and tidying up of various things, deck lists and double-checking articles and stuff. So I think that is going to be a very nice boon to the quality of the content on the site.
And my free time, because now I don't have to try and do the winning deck list. He is going to handle it.
Yeah,
and,
there we go.
And he's making it much prettier. He's going to like color-code it and stuff, things I don't know how to do.
Yeah, he's got some WordPress experience, so he's going to be jumping right in to help out with that stuff. So I'm a big fan of that. Thank you very much, sir. As well, I think by the time you're listening to this, again, most users are going to be noticing some speed improvements around the site, though there's a chance you may run into some caching issues here and there. I updated several things over the weekend, tweaked some settings to try and speed up the site. For reference, we were scoring about a 55 out of 100 on Google page speed analysis. With some tweaks there, we got up to around 75. I decided to bite the bullet and go ahead and upgrade the server as well. Got us up to 81, so we'll see. There's probably still some more to be done, but hopefully that'll make it a little easier for folks to deal with while they go use the event system. Because silly me, I don't know why I didn't have store championship, regionals, etc. as categories, but now they are. So if you go to the event search and hit the advanced field there, you can actually sort things out not only by game night or the generic tournament, but we're also filling in specifically store championships. I've been reaching out to a bunch of stores, essentially all of the ones that FFG had listed as hosting a store championship. Granted, at the time of this recording, I haven't made it all the way through the list yet. It's a long list. Been reaching out to them to see if they would be willing to help out with starting to put some of their stuff here in the event system to make it easier both to promote their store and, you know, make it easier for players to find stuff. So several stores have said they're looking into it. Some have already responded very affirmatively. Some, let's say, less than affirmatively, which was a little frustrating. If you have a local store that's playing, please bug the owners, because I have either messaged them or will be messaging them very soon.
Okay. We've also got the Discord chat.
Definitely. Definitely want folks jumping into the Discord chat. You can find it in the sidebar on the White Book Podcast. Granted, that'll just show you who's online. And then if you click it, kick you over to, I believe, the web chat. But you should be able to join the server from there. There's also Android, iOS, and desktop versions of it. It's a very solid chat program. Much, much better to deal with than Skype.
Genuinely better than Skype. Also, Will, we're going to post the how to get into it in the comments, right?
Yeah, sure thing. I'll post the link right there. We did that a few times, and then, like I said, I dropped it into the sidebar, but we'll make sure we keep drawing some attention. It's been growing. We're up to, gosh, how many people are in there now? Let's see, 18 and 76. So, yeah, nearly 100 people. We're getting there.
We have a few world champions in there as well, including our current co-host.
Yeah, and something that's worth noting there, not only does it do text chat, and we have several different kind of chat rooms there on the server to break things up, you know, between general discussion or looking for games, rules, questions, etc. But we also have multiple rooms set up for voice chat, and voice chat on Discord is kind of cool because it's just a drop in, drop out room, much like the chat, like the text chat. So if you want to play on Octagon with somebody, you don't necessarily have to go through the hassle of tracking them down, befriending them, you know, starting a Skype call, this, that, and the other, and then having this extra person in your list. I've got one general voice chat and two Octagon channels set up right now. So if you want, you can just pop in and have the other person pop in as well. Play your game. Spectators could pop in and listen as well. I've got two rooms set up right now in case there's simultaneous games going and people want to split that up. If we wind up having more need for more channels to split that further, I would be happy to do so.
So I've got some podcast guest news that I don't even think I've told Will yet, so edit it out if you don't like any of it, but you're going to be pretty excited, I think.
Okay.
We've got second place at Worlds, Patrick Haynes, a very popular guest host, coming back sometime relatively soon. In addition, Mr. John Bruno, the other of the two best 1.0 players in America, would like to come on. He's begun playing 2.0 and give us his impressions early. He's something like 20-3 already because he's stupidly good at card games.
Nice.
And another world champion, Ryan Jones, would like to come on and talk about his Thrones War tournament and specific strategy and deck building.
Nice. So. Well, speaking of world champs and site news and whatnot, I think Greg's got a little something he wants to talk about as well, right?
Yes, I do. I'm hoping by the time our listeners listen to this on Friday, it will already have been uploaded. But I am creating a video cast basically called Dobbler Talk. It's not intended to be, you know, long broadcast, generally like somewhere between 5 and 15 minutes. Just talking about a quick subject related to the game. I recorded it already. I hope to upload it tonight or tomorrow. It's going to be awful at first because I am completely tech unsavvy. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm giving it a shot. And so I'm hoping that our listeners, if they haven't already seen it, will go watch it on YouTube. And Will has graciously offered to let me put it on the White Book website. And so please leave your comments. I will absolutely be open for criticism and feedback to make it better, as well as to receive, ideas that people would like to, you know, see me talk about in short little bits. So yeah, it's going to be called Dobbler Talk.
Awesome content. Hey, did we talk about Andreas last week?
I believe we did mention it in passing, but it's definitely worth throwing another nod at, so why don't you lay that on us?
Okay. Andreas, a Swedish player who is of some note in that he was second place at Worlds Melee, and according to some, should have won. He is starting an article series every other Thursday on whitebookpodcast.com, where he's going to interview luminaries of the European meta. So he started off with Alchemista, one of the founders of the Spanish meta, and brother to world champion Alvaro. Brother-in-law, excuse me. Brother of Ingrid, who everyone loves.
Right. Yeah, it was a great article. I was a big fan. And it does bring up the interesting theory of facial hair affecting Thrones performance. So I expect a lot of deep analysis from the listeners on that. Or the readers in this case. Yeah, here's the big stuff, the good one. We are bringing back an oldie but a goodie here, folks. We are finally seeing the return of a segment that Greg debuted for the show back when we were two champs and a chump. I know it's one that's near and dear to his heart. So, Greg, why don't you tell us the name of this segment, a little bit about how that came to be, and then lay the initial argument on us about what we're discussing right now.
All right. Well, the segment is called Berlitha, which I actually didn't name it that. I think you put that acronym together. But it's ban, errata, or leave it the hell alone.
It was also
restrict.
Which is really long, hence the acronym.
Restrict got put in there. We created the segment before restriction was part of the game.
That's fair.
So we ended up adding that in. But yes, that is at least for 1.0, that was an option. Truthfully, for 2.0, we don't know what the options are yet. So that remains to be seen. But basically, the reason why we're bringing this up is because I have a serious case of got to do something with Mr. Tyrion Lannister. And so I thought it'd be good for us to talk about this. Anyone who's been online has probably seen me over the last week or two, you know, share a few thoughts here or there on him. And so so we thought we'd talk about it here. And Aaron wants to disagree with me. So, you know, I guess we're going to have it out a little bit.
And I'm going to have to be the voice of reason again. Come on, guys.
Yeah. Well, first, let me make the initial point. And I'm going to go back probably a little farther than what you guys expected. If 2.0 had not come around, I probably would have quit the game. 2013 was the last time I took Thrones seriously, even though I dabbled here or there. Will, you know that my interest and time investment in the game had, you know, waned to next to nothing. And, you know, before big tournaments, I'd be like, okay, let's go. And, you know, then make a deck. And so, I was pretty much close to being done. I was just burned out on 1.0. And then 2.0 comes along and we play tested it, which I'm not breaking any confidentiality. You can see our names in the, you know, in the little book that give us the credit for play testing it. And even during play testing, I think some of us were like, is this going to work? You know, can they increase the gold curve? Can they introduce reserve? Can they do all these things and make it work? Because even though it's still the same game, it's very different. And so I had my reservations. I played at Worlds in that the introductory, you know, Kingslayer tournament. I did quite well until Rob St. John knocked me out in the White Book run single elimination tournaments. And then I didn't play again. And the core set came out and I was just like, I don't know. And I went ahead and picked up my other two copies of it after Worlds of 2015. And ever since then, I've been hooked. It's a different game. And one of the things I love about it right now is that I feel like it's a game of tough decisions from the onset to the end. And what I mean by that is I'm picking plots for my deck now and I have to make a tough decision. Do I choose a plot with high gold that really doesn't do anything else for me other than give me high gold? Or do I choose a plot that actually affects the game in another manner, whether it be control or card advantage or something else? That's the first tough decision I have to make is building that plot deck. And then even after I build it, playing out those plots is a tough decision. When do I play the high economy? When do I play the you know, high claim, whatever it happens to be? I feel like it's actually a tougher decision in 2.0 than that was in 1.0. Because of the high gold cost curve, I actually feel like how we marshal characters is a tougher decision. In 1.0, most of the time I'm looking at my hand, I'm like, I can marshal out four dudes on the first turn. It doesn't really matter which four dudes. I don't care. You know, I'm putting out four guys, probably cost two or lower, you know, and then the game just runs. Now I'm having to make tough decisions. I'm like, well, do I put out this one high cost guy? Or do I put out two medium cost guys? This high cost guy has more impact on the game, but I feel like I'm making tough decisions in marshalling. And then with the fact that events now cost gold, I'm having to add another layer to that tough decision, which is, do I put out enough characters to ensure that I can win the challenge that my event requires that I win to trigger it? Or do I try and save gold? You know, it's a tough decision because most of these events that have powerful effects within the challenge phase itself have a gold cost anywhere between one to, you know, miscellaneous, such as, you know, the things I do for love. So I feel like right now, one of the reasons I love the game is it's a game of tough decisions. And if you make the wrong decision, there's not an easy reset button. Even Varus is not an easy reset. You have to work to make him work. And I love that about the game right now, that when I make a wrong decision on one of these tough decisions, it can come back to haunt me and possibly even cost me the game. And I like that. There's a lot of tension in my mind in the games that I play. So that whole long story is to basically say this. I believe Tyrion is the one card that regularly and repeatedly removes the need to make tough decisions and has effectively, more than any other card, has made Lannister the de facto number one faction, both as a primary faction and as a banner faction.
Okay. What about him makes him so powerful?
Well, obviously, you know, our listeners should know what he does, but he has the responsibility that after a player initiates an intrigue challenge, that, you know, the owner of Tyrion, or the controller of Tyrion gets 2 gold. So
limit twice per phase.
Limit twice per phase. So he's most games going to get you a minimum of 2. So when you initiate your own intrigue, and then quite often in games, he's going to get you 4 when your opponent initiates an intrigue challenge. And one of the things I love about 2.0 that I didn't mention earlier is that I also feel like it's a game of bluffing right now, that the bluff aspect factors in games. If you leave 2 gold around, your opponent is going to think twice about it. Ooh, he left 2 gold around. He, you know, could have played a character, but he's probably sitting on an event. Whether you are or not, the idea of leaving 2 gold around changes the thought process in your opponent's mind. Tyrion removes that. He removes the bluffing. He removes the tough decision. You're basically saying with Tyrion, once I get him out, I'm going to be able to trigger my event regardless. And I think in the realm of the current character cost balancing, he is so far out of whack with every other character in the game.
Okay.
Speaking of that cost balancing, I think there is one other thing that's worth mentioning about him that we didn't specifically say for the listeners just in case, and that's just the rest of his baseline stats.
Sure.
4 strength for 5 gold, which is, with 2 icons, is a pretty good ratio in second edition already, and he has stealth.
Yeah, and you have to keep in mind stealth is it's not a very common keyword right now. I think there's, what, maybe 12 or 13 characters that have stealth printed on them. It's not a lot. Now, obviously, as the card pool grows, that'll change, but there is not a lot of stealth. You know, if you just want to talk about those baselines, I like to compare him to Paxter Redwing, where Paxter has an ability that's similar. Okay. He's kind of trying to do the same thing as Tyrion. He's going to give you gold that you get during the marshaling phase, which obviously feels more flexible. Now you can use it for multiple things while Tyrion can only use his in the challenge phase. And he's going to reduce the cost of an event by 1. So in a way, you could say he's similar to Tyrion, and he costs 1 less, but he also has 1 less strength. He has 1 less icon. He has 1 less keyword, and he's loyal, which is a huge balancing factor for all these characters that, you know, have the loyal banner underneath their faction. So, you know, when I compare him to another character that I think kind of is intended to accomplish the same thing, Tyrion makes Paxter pale in comparison. And I like Paxter. I use him in my Tyrell decks, but Tyrion's a monster compared to him.
I think a good portion of what does that, because I agree the two are very comparable, but I think for me, what kind of pushes that Tyrion's direction is the stealth. I think with the different flexibility in their abilities and the resource generation, that they would be much more comparable if Paxter had the challenge punch that Tyrion had. Their actual resource abilities, I feel, are much more in line with each other than you probably feel they are, it sounds like.
No, well, 2 gold and 4 gold is a world apart. It really is. It's a world apart.
It's not 2 gold versus, that's a false dichotomy. Yeah,
yes, it is. It absolutely is. Well, but go ahead.
Hold on. Let me point that out real quick. Tyrion is not by default always 4 gold.
Exactly.
You are leaving out the fact that your opponent has control over whether you get 2 of that.
Okay.
May be denying them a challenge if that if they're worried about that, but the point is that they have the control.
They do have the control, but if Tarion was printed as you get 2 gold and your opponent doesn't get to do an intrigue, we would all agree he's super broken. And what you're saying is the fact that the opponent can choose that as an option doesn't make him better. It actually makes him more powerful, that his the very notion that your opponent would think, I can't let him have that extra 2 gold and it is worth removing one of my challenges, lends credence to the fact that his response effect is too powerful, because that is the option.
What if it's just dictating the order of challenges? Even on my own side, I mean, that is a portion of why I wound up pulling Support of the People out of that Lannister Dragon deck, because so many times I was in a spot where I needed to do challenges in a certain way to get the gold from Tyrion, but in order to do that properly, then I couldn't win the power challenge to actually play that, and I couldn't do it in the other order because, well, then I didn't get the gold from Tyrion at the right time. That timing aspect, now, that is a factor with Tyrion. It dictates challenges, whereas something like Paxter is so much more flexible. Plus, the ability to spend that hard gold on attachments and locations and characters.
All power characters affect the way you do challenges. Would you like proof?
Carry on. I think I would agree with the thought, but lay on some examples.
Standing Dragon +1 gold, Illyrio +2 gold, Eddard is going to affect whether you military or power at all and when. Rob is going to affect whether you can military. Balon's going to affect what you have to maintain for defense and how you marshal for the entire game.
You're not making an argument against Tyrion. You're making an argument for him.
No, what I'm saying functionally is that every power character in the game, power character, not just character, these tend to be your 5 gold and higher. The ones that are good, the ones that actually see play, alter the way your opponent has to play the game. All of them do. That's what a power character does. I'm not saying Tyrion's not a power character. He's very clearly a power character.
I don't think anyone's arguing that, though, Aaron.
Right, but since they all affect how you play the game, singling him out and going, well, he breaks it, is unfair. We can get to reasons why in a minute. But saying that, like, Tyrion affects whether you want to make this entry challenge or when, what you have to be prepared for when. You know what? So does Balon. And Balon's a whole one more cost.
So really, you're arguing with Will's point, is what you're doing.
Yeah, so what I'm functionally saying is that there are multiple power characters and or cards that have a similar effect on board state to Tyrion.
No, not even close.
Here's my question. Because I'm willing to go along then that, you know, many of these characters really dictate some choices that type of way, or force hard choices on players, which I would generally think Greg is in favor of. But let's go along here. The question to me then becomes, is Tyrion, like, the level that he does that at, is that too much for 5 gold? Because some of the other examples that come up here, Balin at 6, Daenerys at 7, and you know, you mentioned Eddard at 7, that sort of thing. Perhaps if Tyrion were 7 cost, would you see the same sort of issue?
So, no.
Again, a dragon +1 gold, or plus an unknown fealty.
Right. But, there are some things at the low end, but I feel like that scale does skew more towards that higher end.
Sure, but there's both. I mean, Arianne, once we have more cards, is going to completely break gold.
The cost of a card obviously factors into the balancing of that card. And to Will's more specific question he just asked, which was, if Tyrion was 7 gold, does that make a difference? Yes, it does, because that all factors into the balance of a card. If you just change Tyrion's gold from 5 to 7, how would I feel? I would feel a little differently. As strong as his ability still is, he would be much more difficult to play. Therefore, he would not be played as often. Therefore, he would not be ubiquitously changing the meta that currently already changes.
Let's do that. You said Lannister is clearly the number one deck, the most popular deck. Obviously, I agree.
Not most popular. Well, popular is different than powerful.
So, Fair enough. You said Lannister is the most powerful deck. Lannister does not win the most tournaments. It does not have the best qualification ratio. It's nor is it second. So not Tyrion. Lannister is not the most popular agenda. It is the second most popular agenda.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. How many are bannering since you could still use Tyrion?
The single most popular agenda and the two most popular decks are fealty decks. Or the two most successful decks. Excuse me, we're not worried about popularity. I'm using the wrong word. But the most used and most successful agenda is fealty. The most powerful agenda has been fealty. The most powerful houses, it was first Targ and then, sorry, first Barra and now it's been Targ. And Targ, look at our winning deck list. Targ has been winning far more than Lannister. While I might believe Lannister is better, I might play better with Lannister, the results don't bear that out. Tyrion is not skewing the curve that greatly.
What results are we talking about, Aaron? You need to quote where you're getting these stats from so everyone else can look them up.
Sure. Annals of Castle Black, the Iron Link, and our own winning deck.
Okay, and which major tournaments are we talking about that it pulls from?
Which tournaments?
Tournaments?
The Annals of Castle Black get results from literally almost every tournament in the world.
Right. Which major tournaments have we had so far since 2.0 has been launched?
We've had multiple in Europe that are 30-plus players. As far as tournaments bigger than that, we've only had two. Lannister won one and Martell won one. I won with Lannister.
Okay. I'm trying to make the point that we're still in a small sample size variation of the 2.0 results.
Look, there's like five tournaments a year that are that big, right? Like, especially stateside, that are of...
referring to store. We're about to hit store championships.
We've got, after store championship season,
we'll be able to have a better sample size.
We've got regularly scheduled events that are the size of store championships. Look at the data. Like, we listed it a few weeks ago, but look at the data. We've got regularly scheduled events that are pulling, in the Northwest especially, that are pulling 25, 30 players on a regular basis. We've got regular 18 to 23 person tournaments. The winning deck list that we've been receiving, one of the questions asks for the tournament size. The majority of them are above 16 to 20, which is the size of most store championships. Targaryen fealty is dominating in all of these cases.
I don't know if you're using our winning list. A quick glance at those, I think, actually makes the 8 to 15 category be the most populous.
Okay, fine.
You're in a big Octagon tournament right now, right?
Yep.
Who's undefeated right now?
Dude, I rarely lose a 2.0, and I'm only playing Lannister. I think Lannister is the best. Because I think Lannister is the best does not mean it's the best. You're confusing, like, one result. You're saying that sample size, and we're using one result. Like, literally, Lannister's been really successful when I play it. It's been really successful when, like, a couple other people play it. It hasn't been overall that successful. Like,
out of curiosity, though, what you know, would you say the top couple key cards in that Lannister deck are?
Tywin, Treachery, Hound, and Tyrion.
Will, what deck have you had the most success?
It's the most success is probably still the Lanny Targ one, though the Lanny Stag is probably close behind.
Yeah, and mine is not even close. It's my Targ Lanny. And Aaron, I'm not disagreeing with you. I don't have the stats in front of me, so I literally can't speak exactly to that. I am speaking a little bit anecdotally, and what I have seen in games, in my games, in games around me, and what he does to the game. Okay, now that people still may say, I don't want to play Lannister. I don't want to do Tyrion. I've seen people both in the Skype chat and in the new chat you guys just pimped out that I can't think of the name of it. Discord. People saying, literally saying, I know Lanny's the best. I don't want to play it. Now, again, that's an anecdotal comment from someone in the chat, but I think that there is a general consensus actually amongst the community that they do believe Lanny's the best.
Sure. But part of that comes from, like, me, Will, Alex, and John really think Lannister's, like, great. And guess who the loudest voices in the community are? Like, I mean, that's at least part of it.
And one thing that is kind of parallel to the specific Tyrion argument, though, but is, I think, interesting to bring up here in the broader strokes. In first edition, right, what was kind of the mantra? Draw equals win, right?
Yes.
And for umpteen years of first edition, wasn't it pretty well regarded that everyone hated Lannister and that they were at the top of the heap because of their draw, right?
That's because it was before my time, but sure.
Well, yeah, okay. It was one of their main themes. The other houses didn't have hardly anything to compare at that kind of level, and it was a big thing. So that gradually got shifted, so other houses got more. Now then we hit second edition, and as a definitive theme for the house, draw is no longer a theme for Lannister, right? Mm-hmm. But what did stay? Gold. Income. And what I think have people kind of been debating back and forth in second edition, is draw king now or is income king? And so it's just interesting to see as this shifted in second edition to income, Lannister lost the draw skill that they had but kept the thing that is arguably driving second edition.
Have they lost the draw? They have three draw cards.
Well, it's not listed as an explicit theme for them anymore. So I would hazard a guess that their explicit draw cards are going to stay where they are for a while. Now, like hand kind of destruction and discard and intrigue challenges is still a theme. So they are almost certain to get more card advantage stuff, but I think it's much more likely to attack the opponent. Opponent's hand rather than build their own.
We'll see. They already have two locations that can grant draw in a third in a character, the third card that has insight, and that rivals any other house with in-house banner specific, or excuse me, faction specific draw.
Agreed. Lannister is still excellent draw. Lannister, I'm not disagreeing that Lannister might be a problem. I think Lannister might be the best. I think that suggesting that that's Tyrion is the mistake. I actually don't think Tyrion unbalances much. I think treachery unbalances an awful lot.
No, not at all. No way. It's a one-shot deal. You cancel. It's actually card disadvantage. You're using one of your cards.
Depends what you're canceling.
Sure. If you cancel Plaza or one of the draw cards that your opponent would get to draw to, you're right.
Or a King's Road. It's one gold to stop.
Yeah, it's one to one. It's one to one.
It's one gold to stop four gold on
no,
top. No,
well, it's one gold for one. They spent one on King's Road. You spent one on Treachery.
But you negated a three they were going
to
get.
So
yeah.
It's one to four. And then in addition to that, if you stop a Varys is still removed from the game. That is ridiculous card advantage. For that one little card, nothing else in the game except direct kill. We'll stop.
Stopping Varys is again not card advantage in theory.
No,
it is one to one in theory. What you're saying is if you're stopping an opponent's Varys, it's because you have the board control, and it's because they were going to use the Varys to actually even up card advantage by lowering
You said it's card disadvantage. Even if it's worst case Varys, that doesn't make any sense.
Then that's 1-1.
If there's a Varys that makes no sense, it is at least 1-1. And in practice, whether it's in theory or not, like in practice, it's far more than 1-1.
But see, that's the whole point. Treachery costs 1. A Lannister player with Tyrion out does not have to think about saving a gold around to use their treachery. They don't have to make a tough decision.
Well, they may have to, depending on the order of their challenges, and that's assuming that they are challenging first. If the opponent is challenging first, then maybe whatever they wanted to use or trigger, they're triggering off of the power challenge, which they do first to hit you with a plaza or a military to use Euron or whatever it might be. There's just having Tyrion is not a foregone conclusion that you have the two gold from him to play the treachery at any point you want it.
It's not a foregone conclusion that you have the treachery.
Well, it's not a foregone conclusion.
Treachery is what's actually causing this.
I don't think treachery is at all. I don't agree with that at all. And that's mostly because I don't think Varys is the end-all and be-all in the game. Will hit me with him in one game, and it was very, very powerful. And I played four other games where my opponent's Varys had zero effect on the game and did not help them win at all. Okay, so...
Valar, same idea. But if a skilled opponent plays Varys, like if you're playing Dan Struhal or Will, and they are using Varys as intended, you're probably in trouble. I'm not worried about winning the games that I win anyway. Like, I don't care
The last two times my opponent wanted to play a Varys, he actually showed it to me in his hand and said, I cannot play it. not because he didn't have the gold. He did have the gold, but because it wouldn't have even survived till the dominance phase, and he knew it. The point I'm trying to make isn't that treachery isn't good. Treachery is a very solid card, but it's not a broken card. It's a one shot. You get one shot with it. Hopefully you do cancel a Varus or some other strong effect, but it's one shot. Tyrion, turn after turn after turn, is allowing you to play treachery and put to the sword and Tears of Lys and the things I do for love and everything else you want to play with very little thought. I will concede that you do have to put a tiny bit of thought into the order of challenges, but to be honest, most of the time I'm generally wanting to do intrigue first anyways. Not always. If I do have a Tears, maybe I want to do it not first so they don't kill the Tears character with flame. But I just feel like getting 2 to 4 gold is removing a bluff aspect from the game. It's removing tough decisions from the game. And it is by far much stronger than any of the other gold producing cards in the game. Even Tywin, great as Tywin in, only gives you around two.
Well, one thing though, most of those examples that you're bringing up there and talking about doing generally only total up to 1 or 2 gold. You're generally not having,
you're not using,
you know, enough
gold
of those cards in hand that you need the 4. So I feel like 2 to 2 is a more effective analysis of how much of Tyrion's gold you're using on a kind of an average basis, not how much he can generate. How much you use.
Will, when we played and you beat me in the tournament game, you realize how often you were bouncing back and forth the Hound. When you have characters like the Hound already in the house, you have ambush characters. You're not just using it for events. You are using all of it most of the time. Or it's for dominance. Or you just got 4 strength for dominance in a worst-case scenario.
Wait, here's where I will see the only place I see that Tyrion's a problem is the Hound. The Hound, I think, I truly believe, is particularly poorly designed and overpowered for where the curve is. Were this conversation about the Hound, we would be on the exact same side. Printing the Hound into a house that already had Tyrion makes very little sense to me. Remember that one predates the other. Tyrion in and of himself is almost certainly going to be used specifically for one card a turn. Where when you start playing with the Hound, you're getting a multiple stance, 6 strength character. That's if you use him well, reset free. That's a very different problem. Printing the Hound.
I think my Lanny deck runs more ambush than yours, clearly, because I will often use him to both ambush a card and pay for an event, sometimes to pay for 2 different events.
Sure, okay. But that decision point with ambush beyond the Hound is a straight gold for gold. So you don't actually have a specific different decision point besides bluffing. Because you're specifically, if you had that +2 gold from Tywin that you had in marshalling, you can play the exact same character. Because the Burn Men is 2 for 2. Widow's Wail is 2 for 2.
And the army is
1 for 1. Yeah, I think the army's actually actively generally pretty bad.
Oh, okay. Good to know, because there's 3 of them in my deck.
Oh, enjoy. But I don't
depending on what you do with it. Like I was saying to Sean of Cardboard of the Rings fame, you know, if you're running the claim boosting plot when you have an army around, then the gold cloaks are basically a 2-cost winner is coming, if you look at it that way.
Yep.
That could potentially be claim soak or something, and that's pretty decent.
Are they a 2-cost winter is coming? They don't raise claim.
No, if you're running the plot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess. If you're running Mist of the Realm, sure. I can see specific situations where it's an okay plot. Where it's an okay card. That's totally fine. Whatever. We shouldn't be debating this card, but let's do this very quickly. I don't like 4 gold for setup. 4 gold that I don't especially want to set up. It's an okay card. It's a card I can see using in certain situations. It doesn't fit every deck. It particularly doesn't fit most of my Lannister banner decks. When I'm going mono Lannister, I'm significantly more likely to run it, but I don't think mono Lannister is the way to go because it has significant setup problems because the moneylender, I believe it is, the moneylender is limited, and that gives it limited 2 gold options, which makes it set up significantly worse than I want it to.
And on that note, I actually love the moneylender as a balanced gold-producing card. It is the kind of thing I think Lannister should have, and it fits into a proper balance. That limited keyword makes all the difference, and you just spoke to it. Mm-hmm. Tyrion is not balanced. He is often generating 4 new gold to use during the challenge.
Would you be okay with him if he was limited?
Tyrion is not. Wait, no. Tyrion is not balanced. That I'm not disagreeing with. I'm saying that the power cards in each faction, or almost each faction, I don't know if any Stark card is unbalanced. Maybe. Like, because ice is a little bit silly. But like
Rob could
Yeah, get Rob there, get like there's certain things that are almost unbalanced. Like if a start card said sacrifice a start character to do X, right? I don't even care what X is. All of a sudden Rob is unbalanced. Much like the Hound made Tyrion unbalanced. I think that lack of balance, like you seem to have built a deck specifically to break Tyrion and then are like, oh my god, he's broken. Well, yeah, when you build a deck specifically to break someone, like, yeah, just
no,
like
that's not
well,
at that all was, what, no, that's that, not at all
that
what
does
I
that does lead me into a direction though.
Hang on.
And I'm just curious, how well does your deck function, as an example, Greg, if you don't have Tyrion? Do you feel like you can no longer do the things that deck needs to do?
No, I think you're wording it wrong. What I'm saying is that when Tyrion's out, he's like super lube, okay? Well, when Tyrion's out, I can do anything I want to do.
So Tyrion's the least important of my big guys in my Lannister deck. I'd much rather have Tywin. Tywin is significantly more important. And a lot of the time, I'd rather have Jaime.
Well, I with the Tyrion question there, Greg, I wasn't trying to necessarily say your deck revolves around him, but I was curious if you feel like it's hampered if you don't have him, because all of this discussion is being funneled down into one character who is honestly, you know, fairly vulnerable. Like, you know, these effects aren't spread out as, you know, across the house as a whole. This is a specific card, and specific character removal seems to have a much more prominent place in second edition than it did in first edition.
Specific character removal, unfortunately, is not an argument against Tyrion or for whichever way you want to look at it, because every five cost character essentially has the same character removal aspects. It's basically like saying, let's have a wine test to see which wine tastes better. And then someone says, no, wine will get you drunk. Well, that's not the point. You know, all wine will get you drunk. We're arguing about which one tastes better. Same thing with Tyrion. All five cost characters that fit within a four strength paradigm are essentially going to have the same downsides in terms of possible removal of them. You could make an argument that Tyrion actually is less because he has an intrigue icon and can't get hit with tears, okay? But I'm not really even...
Well,
I'm not even gonna...
if you want to extend that wine analogy, what you're basically saying is, you know, this Merlot tastes so much better than everything else, we really ought to pour some vinegar in it.
Right, but even more than that, it's saying that, like, if I'm eating, and I'm not a winey, so I'm going to do this poorly, but if I'm eating a red steak, Merlot is absolutely, like, the best. It is far superior. But you're not always eating a red steak. Sometimes you're eating fish, and you need that nice white wine. You are building
concede.
A deck. You are building a steak deck and saying that this Merlot is incredible.
How many decks do you run where none of the events cost gold?
Almost none, but that doesn't mean I always want Tyrion in every deck.
I would say that every deck that
really
has gold cost events. Yeah, try Greyjoy. You really put to the sword is great in Greyjoy. You can win the unopposed challenges and win by five much easier than any other house. But it is much harder to have that two gold left over. You don't have to. Now you're smoking crack. If it's not harder for Greyjoy to have two gold,
once I have Balon out in a couple zero cost locations, I can functionally, as long as I have some kind of chud, save gold as much as I want, because Balon's going to do the job for me. I don't need those extra cards. So beyond reserve, I keep a bunch of cards in hand when I'm playing Greyjoy.
That's not even close. You absolutely need the extra card.
Why?
You absolutely. Your own kill effects, someone hitting you with their Dracarys, their Tears of Lys, their Put to the Sword. You can't just say, I'm going to put out Balin and one Claim Soak and expect to get by. It doesn't work like that.
No.
You're going to lose him.
I've got a reserve of six. The Greyjoy Martell deck, Greyjoy deck I've thought is most successful, runs functionally like it runs 6-5-4 and then a bunch of twos. And like, if I have a couple of those twos out, I'll obviously play other cards. I run mostly high gold plots. I think not running at least three plots that can generate five or more gold in any deck in the meta right now is a mistake, including in Lannister. I think the majority of your other plots should be fours too. I think running more than one, like three or two gold plot is a mistake. I just do. I think that you are limiting yourself and you are limiting your options in deck building. I don't think that's a difference in 1.0. I think that 1.0 players got used to treating gold as a given in plots instead of an effect that, that you have to plan around. It just didn't, it almost didn't matter in 1.0 unless it was so, so low. Where in 2.0, it's actually part of the plot effect, what you can play with it. That's fine. That's actually increasing decision points. I agree. Where it changes.
I was about to say that. You're actually, again, making my point for me, no, which but, is that that's a decision-making process, and Tyrion removes the decision-making.
No, because you're not. If you're running 3-2 gold plots in Lannister or 3-2 and 3 gold plots in Lannister, you're still going to end up in trouble unless you happen to see not Tyrion early, Tywin early. So with that one exception, you are still going to end up in some very specific trouble. Now, given the way 2.0 deck building works right now, and again, we've seen the results, you need to run those high gold plots. Once you're running those high gold plots, assuming that your deck has a decent curve, you will be able, you should be able to afford those extra 2 gold plots, you just those extra 2 gold events. You yeah, just and should. If
so,
you're not,
if a,
that's
using
fine.
Your ba- using your Balin example, which is a fine example, but you have Balin, you think you have enough claim soak on the board to absorb your opponent's challenge, and you're like, okay, I'm going to choose not to pay this last 2 gold on an extra character that I think is ubiquitous, and instead hold it for this event. Again, decision point. You've
that's not
chosen.
Really, that's yes, that's a decision point, but it's a bad decision point. Bad players play that extra card. I'm not worried about beating players I already beat. Good players make good decisions. Like in Lannister, even if I have Tyrion out, I'm probably not going to play that extra character because I don't know what my opponent's going to play. I'd rather save it and have options for the future. That's the right move. Like that's just like basic Thrones 101 decision making. Like
that's my point. Tyrion, you don't have to do that though. You really don't.
But you still
really don't.
But you still do. Like you almost never just like. Or most of the good players I know, which I can't speak for everyone. I can speak for the good players I play regularly with, the JC Wamas, the Hines, the Dark Notches, will hold that extra card in hand because it's more useful on a board position that's already functionally set. Generally speaking, it's more useful in your hand as either claim soak or as something you can use should there be an unexpected wildfire or Varys or something of the kind. Now, resets exist. These different options exist. Sometimes that's going to bite you, but generally playing more defensively is the way of 2.0.
You mentioned holding an extra card in hand. Again, that is very specific to a situation. You know, whether you feel like you can hold it, if you have one character in hand on the board, you don't hold it. You have to put it down. It's specific to your situation. You can't just automatically say, I will always hold an extra card in hand. That doesn't work like that.
It's not extra if I only have one card on the board.
Again,
you laid out a very specific situation where you said these are extra characters. These are superfluous characters. These are characters where the board set is already set, where you feel like you have enough claim soak and so on, and now you're changing the variables to suit your argument. If you would like to present the argument, feel free. I'll debate that, but you can't change the terms mid-argument.
Okay, I said if you felt that way, if you thought that it was a ubiquitous character in your Balin example, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you feel that it's a ubiquitous character, then it's again, what you were saying is it doesn't matter whether you have the event in hand or not. You're saying, I don't really want to play this character anyways. My point is on the decision points. When you are sitting there saying, I need this extra character, but I also want to pull off my event, okay? If you already have a ubiquitous character, you're right. It's a non-decision point because you're going to want to hold him for after some form of reset, okay? But that's not what I'm referring to. What I'm referring to is the decision points. When you truly have to make the tough decision of, do I play the character or do I hold back to play the event? But I may not be able to play the event without the extra character because I may not even be able to meet its conditions. Tyrion removes that decision point.
Sure, but so do multiple different situations in the game. Multiple good cards in the game and multiple potential situations remove decision points or at the very least make decision points significantly more difficult.
Not like Tyrion. There's no point.
Easier, you mean?
Again, Targaryen Fealty is the single most successful deck in the game. If I've got a Tyrion on the board, so let's just use Tyrion as an example. If I've got a Tyrion on the board and I really want to win an intrigue, and he's got a standing dragon and a standing fealty, if I want Tyrion alive, I am now in a bad position.
Correct, but fealty, again, is a cost reducer that everybody knows exists. And
so
it doesn't...
Tyrion is a gold generator that everyone knows exists.
And he generates 4. Fealty generates 1. There's a world of difference between those two things.
It's about the strength of the effect that it's generating, not this sheer number. What Tyrion does is in a small way, I believe, decrease decision points, but he greatly increases options for a deck. All powerful cards do something to this effect. They either greatly increase your options, think Eddard or Rob or someone who increases your options, or they greatly limit your opponent's options. Tyrion increases your options, cards like Balon or, I don't know, whatever else, greatly decrease the opponent's options. I'm going to use Neil as a quick example. Stannis functionally reads, it doesn't matter how many cards you play, two of them are what you can use. So he is functionally, much like most Neil, operating as Gold Denial. Same concept as Melisandre, saying if you choose the right target, if you know how to do this, you will be denying X, Y, or Z. Tyrion instead says, instead of you cannot, it says you, the Lannister player, can do this extra stuff. I think that increases the options of the game, and with all the denial in the game, it's a valid point to have that in the game. It is not overpowered in that every house has something like that. Lannister is not overperforming, so there's no need to take any drastic measures for a deck that's not particularly overperforming based on our opinion, since now we do have data. And as far as sheer efficiency goes, there are multiple one-for-one or two-for-two effects within Lannister.
Okay, so in your final stance, then, I would say you would like to leave it the hell alone.
I would like to leave it the hell alone for now. Going forward, once the card pool grows, I could absolutely see restriction along with the Hound, because I truly believe that the Hound is functionally the biggest high gold target for Tyrion, and it's where the balance area comes in.
Okay. Greg?
I actually cannot disagree with Aaron's point that he increases options, but essentially that's what I'm saying, that he increases options so greatly, I no longer have to worry about making tough. So, I personally feel like my deck, like you asked a question earlier, my deck runs so much better with him. It doesn't mean he is impervious. He clearly can get killed, get removed, get blanked, get whatever, just like any other character. But I just feel in the 5 gold cost curve, he blows away every other 5 cost character. And it does have to be looked at, as Aaron said, in the context of what else Lannister has available. And they do have a lot of other things available. And that is part of the problem with him. If Lannister didn't have all these other pay gold effects, you know, if all of a sudden I didn't have things I do for love, then, oh, wow, I have this 4 gold I wasn't expecting. And now I'm returning a card to your hand that neither of us thought would be possible that I've done. It's a different story. And I agree with that. We aren't looking at him in a vacuum. I'm interested to see the results from the store championships. I think we will begin to see the migration towards Lannister, either as a primary faction or as a banner faction. But my personal opinion on him, obviously, I'm banning a card is silly. I have no interest in banning Tyrion. And I think we are so early in 2.0 that would be bad for the game. Restriction. We don't have a restricted list. And even if he got put on it alone, unlike the tournament restricted list of people that can no longer play in FFG events, a one card restricted list means nothing right now. Okay, so I really feel like there are only two options: leave him the hell alone or find some sort of errata. And for me, there's only 3 possible errata I would even consider, because I think that they are all minor enough to still maintain the idea of what he is. I would either give him the loyal, the loyal faction thing, which unfortunately isn't very thematic for Tyrion, because
I disagree there. We're early in the books, right? Mister, I never bet against my family. Totally, super, 100% loyal. That's actually the only errata that I'd be okay with. Like the others, I think are not good ideas. But like he is super loyal early in the book.
Early in the books, and then he shoots his dad in the stomach with a crossbow.
Spoilers.
We are book one for core set cards. We are not meant to be going forward. It's stated like. We are. This is early Tyrion.
That's fine, then. Yeah. I have no problem with the loyalty. I just know other people would argue that that's not thematic. But from a errata standpoint, that's one of the options. The other option is either limit him once per phase or lower the quantity to 1 gold. I think either one of those puts him closer to on par with the other cards in his cost range and his ability.
All right. I guess it's kind of funny. We are early enough in the game that I think effectively we all wind up sounding very similar in our final decision about what can or should be done. Banning is far, far too early. And I think restricting is as well. I think we're at least a solid year out from any cohesive attempt at any kind of restricted list, maybe longer than that, since we would need more to go with it. I'm not necessarily convinced that he's a busted card, so to speak. But if results come back after, you know, store championships, I may even be willing to wait on through regionals as well, where it looks, if it looks like Lannister and Lannister Banner, or sorry, Banner of the Lion decks are overperforming, then I would be willing to make him loyal to kind of tone that down a little bit. Plus, as noted moments ago, that's actually really Nedley for where this Tyrion is supposed to be depicted.
Let me, Will, I want to make one more point. When I first started playing 2.0, I did not use Hand's Judgment. I didn't think it would be very good because I never played it in 1.0. Mm-hmm. And then I started including it in decks and everything changed. I was finding, now again, because I primarily used Lannister, I was finding I had the gold around to cancel the events I wanted to cancel. Now, along the same lines, you know, I would make an argument that a Hand's Judgment is much like Treachery. It can have that single impactful play. And so what I've found is that in my non-Tyrion decks, I have trouble playing it. They'll, you know, it's hard to always make that tough decision. Ooh, they left two gold around. I better leave two around, you know, to be able to cancel whatever they play. But in the Tyrion ones, I often don't have to worry about that.
I agree. Hand's Judgment is excellent in 2.0. I think there's a lot of cards that are immediately to 1.0 players seem wrong, like they shouldn't work in 2.0. But the size of the card pool combined with the differentness of the game has combined to make multiple cards that would be completely suboptimal in 1.0 absolutely solid to good in 2.0. A good player, when you want to get off a Put to the Sword, generally you want to go first because you're trying to limit your opponent's options. At that point, that Put to the Sword is, with Tyrion on the board, changing your opponent's challenge order more than it's changing what they're trying to do. If you lead with Intrigue, when you want to Put to the Sword and Tyrion's on the board, you deserve to get your crap canceled. You've just made a dumb play mistake. Further, the big play for, in general, the big reason that Hand's Judgment has seen such a resurgence is not, in fact, Lannister. It is, well, unless you're running a heavy Varys deck, in which it is Lannister, but it's Treachery again, it is more likely to be saved for Dracarys. It's being run because Targ Fealty, Targ Lion, Targ Rose are ubiquitous decks. They are legitimately, like every third deck you play online, they're constantly everywhere. They're performing great, and you need to have that answer for Dracarys. Saving one gold is something that most decks can afford to do.
Again, you have to make the decision to do that, and that's fine. I'm completely okay with that. I feel like with my Tyrion decks, I very rarely have to. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Sometimes it does, but I very rarely have to.
Props and slops. I'm going to go ahead and jump out here, and I'm going to prop not only, or sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm going to slop, actually. Not only ourselves, but actually darn near everyone discussing the game these days. Had a listener point this out to me fairly recently, and there's not a lot of consistency in the way we talk about factions and banners right now.
I do it.
That make it very, very difficult to keep track of what's what. Yeah, so, some people, I'm talking,
yelled at me, and I fixed it since, I think, or mostly.
Nice. Yeah, but by and large, it's kind of an issue. People flip back and forth. Sometimes you say, you know, Lanny banner. Well, does that mean it's a Lannister main house with some other kind of banner with it? Does it mean it's some other main house and that you have the Lion banner to it and that sort of thing. So I just want to mention here, I'm making it kind of a personal thing to try and be better with that. And if it is the main house, to call it by the house name, and if it is actually the banner agenda, to always call it by the animal name, as the agendas are actually titled. And I would challenge everybody else out there listening, doing their own shows, casts, videos, writing, and whatnot, to try to be careful to make sure and do the same thing so that everyone knows what we're actually talking
about.
Hey,
Will, what's your favorite animal? Is it a sun or is it a watch?
Lion?
Sun or watch? They're not all animals.
I've already forgotten what your request is, so I'm supposed to call my house what again?
Call your house or faction its actual name. Call the banner agenda rose, sun, lion, stag, etc. instead of saying banner Braithen, because then it's unclear whether you mean Braithen is your main house or you're bannering two.
Exactly.
All right. Okay. I want to slap Greg for suggesting that crack is bad for me using it. Crack is delicious and wonderful.
A New Yorker would say that.
When did I say that? Sometime this week?
No, earlier in the Tyrion discussion.
Geez, I don't even remember what I said a few minutes ago. Right? Dude, that was a high-pitched laugh.
I didn't laugh.
Oh, it's all the crack.
I just said, aw.
No, it came across in my computer very high-pitched. I wasn't even sure who it came from. So.
All right. Anybody else got anything?
I want to prop Greg for getting his kids to play, or kid at the very least.
Yeah.
Yep.
Way to be. I hear he had some success.
Just one. Yeah, and I had to do all his triggers for him. He got out Plaza Punishment against me and got out Tyrion. I let him play the good deck, you know. And I played Stark, and yeah, he crushed it.
Way to be.
I want to prop Beyond the White Book, the YouTube channel of Dark Nodge and I. We are John, because Alex made fun of him, I'm almost certain, has learned how to edit on YouTube, so the quality should be going up. I also just ordered a headset, so hopefully I sound significantly better this episode. Let me know. But that'll also be on the YouTube channel, so the quality is going up. The intro is coming. One of our wonderful listeners is making it, and it should be ready anytime now.
Awesome. Well, I've got one that's kind of a pre-prop. Or no, actually, I can make it an actual prop to the kind of mid-season renaissance in television that's going on right now. I was starting to say pre-prop because... where we are right now, I have not watched the return for the second half of the season of, say, Arrow and Flash, though I'm about to. Legends of Tomorrow starts next week. Agent Carter Season 2 started last week, and Gallivant Season 2 right before that. So I have a lot to get caught up on. Heck, Shannara, maybe my favorite fantasy series. And there's finally a TV show with one of my favorite actors playing Alanon, Manu Bennett, and I haven't watched any yet. The first episode of The Magicians is out where you can watch it online. There is a glut of awesome television content, and I don't have enough time to consume it.
I want to prop the best basketball player in the world, Steph Curry. Not only did they just completely wreck the Cavs while we were recording, I was watching them beat the Bulls. He hit a ridiculous three with two Bulls draped all over him. And then the next play, he drove past three Bulls and dunked in their face, and it was completely hilarious.
What else are you doing while we're recording?
You really don't want to know.
Crack. Obviously, crack, Greg. That's
yeah.
how I have my beliefs.
Yeah.
Crack.
All right.
You know where you find crack?
At the end of a chapter of the White Book. Well, come on, nobody was going to say no in the Danger Zone? Seriously?
We ended with a different version.